This podcast is brought to you by BrunnerAcademy.com, your online resource for the best public speaking, presentation, storytelling skills courses. Become a rockstar communicator in any setting. Visit BrunnerAcademy.com.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Live Your Best Life with Liz Brunner. I'm Liz, and my goal with each episode is to share stories of people who are recreating their lives or rising above challenges to write their next chapters with authenticity. These stories give me the courage to go after living my best life, and I think they will do that for you too. If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show, so this podcast can continue to inspire next chapters all over the world. For almost 40 years, my guest life on the outside appeared to be perfect. All-star athlete, Ivy League graduate, successful attorney. But on the inside, she was unraveling every single day, suffering with nearly debilitating anxiety, panic attacks, obsessive-compulsive behaviors, bouts of depression, eating disorders, and even thoughts of suicide. Today, she has transformed her anxiety into her superpower, and she is helping others do the same. Wendy Tamas Robbins, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast. It's great to see you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you too.
You say you are a self-proclaimed professional panic attacker, and you are now living a life that is anxiety-free, not because you're free from anxiety, but because it no longer controls you. What's the difference for you?
I really don't have a lot of anxiety anymore. I mean, I see my anxiety now as a fierce and loyal protector. And it has been for humans for thousands and thousands of years. That's why we're here. It's a very important protective mechanism that we have. For the little bit that I have now, I just get quiet and listen to it because it's asking for something. It's leading me somewhere that is pushing me out of my comfort zone. And so we're like friends now. Whereas before, when it was controlling me, I would wake up with fear, wondering when it was going to come, when it was going to take over my body. And I felt like my body was betraying me all day because, you know, I had all of these stress hormones just being poured into my veins and didn't know how to deal with it, didn't know what was happening to me. So it controlled every thought I had, every move I made, and every decision, big and small, honestly.
Your book is titled The Box, An Invitation to Freedom from Anxiety. I read it last weekend, Wendy, and it is powerful. It's raw, it's brutally honest, and so courageous. Chronicling your journey as a young girl, around 6 to 7 years old, suffering your first panic attack, to a powerful portrait of a woman who refused to remain caged in an emotional box of your own making. Explain the box to us.
So the box literally started as a refrigerator box that my parents had put in the living room once for us to play in after they had purchased this new refrigerator. And I thought that I was playing in it until I really started my journey to figure out if I could ever be free from debilitating anxiety. And so I said, I need to go all the way back to the beginning. And I had this image of this box that I used to, quote unquote, play in, and realized that I was really hiding from the chaos and the sort of volatile environment that my house was at that age. Once that box was thrown away, that was when I had my first panic attack because I didn't have my safe place anymore. And so I started building this mental construct of a box. And as I grew and my anxiety and fears grew, the walls of that box grew. The book is really about, where did that box come from? What were the walls made of? You know, things like overachieving and perfectionism and people pleasing. And then how was I going to deconstruct all of that through this journey of, you know, self-compassion, but also just like scary exploration and exposure therapy, forgiveness, and all of these things that have led me to where I am today.
You had many, many triggers, which you outline in your book, The Box, and living in that box, both metaphorically and emotionally with that cardboard box, you had a need to control everything and avoid risk of any kind. In fact, working overtime to the point that you write, the fear of anxiety was as intense as the fears that caused the anxiety in the first place. And you write, quote, you became more afraid of living than of dying, that you were training your brain to believe your life was always at risk. Explain what you mean when you say you're training your brain.
I became so hypervigilant at such a very young age that my limbic system was really on overdrive. The normal scenario is you're walking through the jungle and then a predator comes and you get triggered by the predator. And when the predator's gone, then you go back into a normal state. Like that would be a normal anxiety or fight or flight trigger. My world became walking through a very safe jungle, afraid of any tiny sound, any tiny feeling of wind on my cheek or anything, you know, wondering, that tree looks like it's standing right now, but it could fall on me. And just being triggered by everything because I was, like I said, so hypervigilant, believing that there was risk at any turn. So I was playing out those scenarios in my head as if everything was a threat and the ultimate worst case scenario would happen. So I was seeing my death literally occurring every day, which was sort of training my brain to believe. I was reinforcing this sort of dysfunction.
Give me a list of the triggers, because I know you talk about a lot of them. One was driving. You just talked about some of them walking. What are some of the other triggers that you went, whoa, I'm in danger here?
I don't think we have that kind of time. But
well, it is a long list. Just pick two or three other than what we've already talked about.
Rain, any sort of water coming from the top versus submerging in water. Food. Part of my OCD was contamination OCD. So if somebody handed me a bottle of water that had already been opened by maybe just them, like anything that sort of seemed like it could be just tasted off a little bit, emails and calls from clients and things like that, it became like a very threatening situation where your life is not your own and like a big law type situation as a lawyer. But yeah, down to getting on a boat or having someone else driving the car or getting on a plane or anything where I was not in control. You can sort of see the undercurrent of that.
What I found so fascinating was that even when you were driving yourself, you talk about how you had to make sure you had an exit off the highway. You couldn't get stuck in traffic because you had to find a place to make sure you could escape, for lack of a better word. And you carried with you these little yellow pills that you weren't even taking, but you had to have them everywhere. Tell us about the pills.
Well, the pills triggered me too. I was afraid to take pills. I was afraid to put anything like that in my body. So I really couldn't medicate myself perhaps the way I needed to be to sort of get myself out of the most intense acute moments. So it became this sort of catch 22 where if I didn't have it, because it was such a ripcord that I felt like if I was really thinking I was dying from a panic attack, I could take this pill and it would be okay. So I needed to have it at all times. If I reached in my pockets and it was not there, it would lead to a panic attack because I felt like I didn't have the skills to survive on my own.
In your book, The Box, you say that we all face barriers. We all put ourselves in boxes, that we're all prisoners of something. What are some of those other boxes, those prisons that people may not consider a box or a prison, but when you put it in your perspective, it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of mental constructs created by societal pressures, societal norms, like whether it's the patriarchy and the boxes that I would say all women find themselves in because of the programming that we go through as children, but also men, the programming that they go through. So many men that I coach and talk to in this space have a really difficult time talking about their own emotions or even being able to recognize them themselves. And they're taught to just push them down. And, you know, the rates of depression and suicide ideation for men are so high because of that. I mean, those are all boxes that we don't really know how to step out of without learning certain skills and realizing and acknowledging what got us into those boxes in the first place. And that it's not our fault. We're not broken. We just lack the skills that it takes to free ourselves from those spaces.
So much of the world still stigmatizes mental illness. And that's part of your work today, is to destigmatize it. And yet the statistics are astonishing, particularly around anxiety disorders, which is said to affect 25% of kids who are 13 to 18 years old, and more than 40 million adults over the age of 18. That's a lot of people. And you also write in your book about looking outside of yourself for answers initially and trying to find relief, and then coming to that realization that the only way that you were going to find your way out was you had to go within. How did you get to that point of saying, I have to figure this out on my own?
It was when I realized that I had gotten all of the accolades, all of the external validation, all of the positive reinforcement that I was going to get. And if that wasn't going to be enough in terms of my profession, my personal life, if that wasn't going to give me the healing that I used to think it should give me, then it was going to be up to me to figure it out. I was so terrified of my inner world for so many decades. It was like, okay, this is like the last frontier. You know, I'm not going to the moon with Jeff Bezos. So I'm going to find it in me. And that was the most incredible life-changing journey I could ever imagine, because now I have this, it's where I really cultivated a very deep sense of peace that I never thought possible in the state that I lived in, and discovered like this authentic power that and confidence that I can step out into a world and be adventurous. Understand that I have those skills now that we were talking about before. I don't need a pill in my pocket. I don't need alcohol. I don't need any person on the telephone as my safety net. I have everything I need.
You know, you also share that you tried many therapists, many therapies. One therapist, I couldn't believe she said this to you, you were going to have to live with all your disorders, which, like, that's not really very helpful, I don't think. You just talked about challenging yourself. And one of the quotes that you have in your book also is, without challenge, there is no change. And you said you have to get comfortable with that messy. You have to challenge yourself both mentally and physically. Give us a sense of some of the things that you did to challenge yourself and move through the messy.
There was big and small, that's for sure. Skiing, meeting my husband, who was like an extreme skier, and starting on the bunny hill. And that's not just a physical challenge, that is a mental challenge. As someone who was a Division I athlete in college, an athlete my whole life, just the shame that surrounds presenting yourself in that vulnerable a way is difficult. So there's this external challenge, but it's also an internal challenge. Same with sailing. We had started sailing at one point, and that trusting in nature, forget it. I do not trust nature at all. Like, she's a force to be reckoned with. So just being there and not having a motor, not having that kind of control. I mean, that's another external and internal, but also loving and forgiving. There's a lot of exposure that can be done just one-on-one with another human being. Thinking about the boxes we're in and the walls that we create, so many of them are how we relate to other human beings. Just recently, I said, you know, I don't break down anymore. I break open. You add a little courage to breakdowns and it becomes a breaking open. You can expose yourself to other people in ways that you build the connection that you've always been looking for rather than hiding from it.
I think it's very difficult for people who have never suffered anxiety or know someone who suffers from it about how debilitating it can be. And you do share that in the book as well. What I also love about this book is that it's in four sections, and the last one revealing that your life you have now, how you've manifested your life outside of the box, and you wrote these powerful words. I spent my life either bracing for the crash or retreating to safer ground. If only I'd known that if I released my grip, cut my tether, and moved just beyond my comfort zone, I could ride the wave rather than be destroyed by it. After 40 years of suffering, Wendy, what does it feel like to live outside the box?
First, that gave me goosebumps just reading that.
Those are your words, my dear.
No, I still feel that so deeply because there are so many crashes that came after the end of the book. It's funny, like I say, when a book ends, a life doesn't. And after that, we had a global pandemic that I feel like I had been preparing for that my whole life. I was like, come on, people, this is what I've been talking about.
You knew this was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I'm ready for it. Who else is ready? I had ACL replacement surgery, which for, again, a person who moves her body to process all of this anxiety. And that's sort of my grounding space was a big deal to be on crutches for that long. And then I was diagnosed with colon cancer just about 6 months after that. And I had just lost my mom a year before that. And so it was this tsunami of really difficult challenges that I was presented with. outside of that box. Mm. And there were so many moments that I could have followed those breadcrumbs back in. It was like the universe sending me these gifts almost. Like, okay, let's see how you've done. Let's see how these skills and mindset shifts and, you know, this courage that you've cultivated, let's take it for a spin. And making it through those very challenging times, especially with health anxiety was a huge part of my specific kinds of anxiety. And to go through cancer and chemotherapy and several surgeries, I'm just really proud of myself for staying outside the box and still doing the work and being able to grow from those experiences and not really be changed by them in a negative way.
I'm assuming your health is good today. Yes, I hope, crossing my fingers.
Yes, it is.
Good. Thank you. We should point out that you had stage 2 colon cancer and you're now through all your treatment, but you described that journey as being, quote, brutal and beautiful. How so?
It was brutal in that it was one of the most difficult physical and mental spaces I've ever been in. I cried and slept a lot for months. Part of the brutal part is that it's a 2-week regimen of being on the chemo and you bring the pump home with you. And that first week is extremely brutal. And as you start to feel better, your physical body's getting better, but you're getting closer to the next treatment. So your mental health starts to deteriorate. I would cry the first week because of how bad I felt physically. And then I would cry the second week because of how scared I was to go back in. My husband didn't know if I was coming or going. And I found that a very difficult, interesting journey to navigate for sure. And it was beautiful in a sense of, I mean, a cancer diagnosis will give you a new lens on life immediately. So there was that beauty and that you start to appreciate things in a very different way. You start to prioritize your own well-being fiercely, which is very important that I wish we could all have without a diagnosis. And then when I found myself at the bottom of that well, had it been the first time that I ever visited a space that dark, I'm not sure what that journey would have looked like. And I had recognized it from being even very young. My first bout of depression was in 5th grade. And I looked around and I knew that I could find my way out. It was just in a very strange way, I guess, a beautiful space to be in. Like, I'm going to be able to do this all by myself because I know who I am now.
Today, you've put your 24-year legal career on pause to work as a wellness and transformational coach and anxiety expert. Wendy, what does living your best life mean to you today?
Definitely prioritizing myself, my own well-being in ways that I never really had before. Seeking out more growth, peeling back more layers every day, and really serving people that not only look like me in terms of the 21-year-old girl who is in the same exact space that I was when I was 21, but also serving bigger communities like the legal community and places that are just really struggling with their own mental health as a group, doing all that I can to really instill in them the importance of their mental health and their well-being, and destigmatizing these discussions, having these conversations as much as I possibly can so that we're looking at mental health on a global scale the same way that we do physical health.
So important. Wendy's book is titled The Box, An Invitation to Freedom from Anxiety. And you can learn more about her book, her wonderful coaching practice, and her podcast at WendyTamisRobbins.com. WendyTamisRobbins.com. We will have that for you in our show notes. Wendy, you certainly have shown us that it is possible to regain control of one's life and that saying yes is more than a word. It's an investment in what is possible. And because you said yes and found your way out of your own box, others can do the same. Thank you so much for your courage and shedding light on this very important topic. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm going to leave you with one final thought from Wendy's book, in which she says, "I used to think I was either full of fear or courage. Now I know there is no courage without fear. The more afraid I am, the more courageous I become." May each of you find your courage to live your best life. Until next time, be well.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Fast Twitch Media. helping people tell their stories and giving them worldwide reach. The future is in the cloud, and Fast Twitch Media can take you there. Be your best digital self. Check out fasttwitchmedia.space.